Radiolab is supported by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Wait, you're listening?
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
You're listening to Radiolab.
Radiolab.
From
WNYC.
See?
Yeah.
And NPR.
I don't know. How would you describe this one?
My sense is that you walk into a wild place and you hear the wind and the trees and you hear these chirps and sounds and calls. And they're just part of the wild. They're wildlife. But there's now a group of scientists who listen much more closely and who are reducing wildlife to wild talk.
Yeah.
There are words in there.
When you find the words, as the people we will meet do in these stories, you end up not just understanding, but actually entering that wild space in a very cool way.
Right.
This is a story, this first one, that we heard about.
Yeah.
From Ari.
I'm Ari Daniel Shapiro. I'm a public radio producer in Boston.
And Ari recently met a guy, I think a German guy.
He's Swiss.
No. Okay.
So yeah, his name's Klaus Zuberbühler.
Hey Ari, it's Klaus.
And he's a professor of psychology
at the University of St. Andrews,
which is in Scotland.
And where does the story actually take place? Because
where's the jungle?
Yeah.
Well, maybe the best place to start is to kind of describe the scene where we are,
okay,
which is in the Thai forest.
Thai forest.
Which is in the Ivory Coast in Africa.
So it's not in Thailand.
No, it's not. It's T-A-I.
T-A-I. Okay.
Yeah. And Klaus describes the jungle as this thick sensory world.
Very dark, very moist, and very, very green.
And you can't really see for more than 15 to 20 feet.
And, I mean, sometimes you feel like you walk through, a big cathedral of dark trees, and you don't see very much because all the animals are obviously very shy and run away.
I mean, is it still?
No, it is very, very noisy.
It's a din. It's just this kind of sonic
chaos. All these insects and birds and bats and mammals, it's almost as if they compete for acoustic space. So it is very, very loud. I mean, the main sensation you have in the beginning really is that you're just completely lost.
So it's 1991,
right,
and he figured he had to start somewhere, so he focused his attention on a kind of monkey.
A very beautiful monkey, I think.
Called the Diana monkey.
This mix of black, white, and sort of reddish.
Diana monkeys live up in the treetops, which can be as high as 100 feet off the ground.
Wow.
They eat fruits, and they eat insects, and they're chattering.
A cacophony of calls.
Which, to him, of course,
you know, as a newcomer to the forest,
was all just noise.
It's a little bit, I imagine, like a child trying to learn a language, which initially must just sound like a string of sounds that he can't really understand. And then, you know, what?
So what did he do?
Well, he started provoking the monkeys into making different kinds of noises. For instance, he'd walk out into the forest with a boombox,
a speaker,
and play. The sound of the Diana monkey's most feared predator, the leopard.
He would just play the sound into the trees?
Yep.
Whoa.
And all of a sudden,
suddenly,
they start leaping around the branches,
you know, you see all this
hopping around,
motion,
and they make this one particular call.
You know, these very loud alarm calls.
This one here.
Meaning what?
Yeah, are they just saying, like, run, or is it something more specific?
Well, here's where it gets a little bit more interesting. Next step, he brought that same cassette player out.
Pointed at the trees, hit play, all that?
Yep, but this time, he plays.
the shrieks of a crowned eagle.
Eagles eat monkeys? Yeah, they do.
They attack from above.
I've heard about them. They're very scary. They come flying in with their talons or their beaks, and they hit you in the head sharply and kill you instantly.
Oof.
And then you fall to the ground.
Yeah. And so what do the monkeys do when they hear this?
They make that sound.
Same one?
Well, that's what he thought. But when he went back to the lab and started looking at the sounds on the computer, comparing one to the other, eagle, leopard, eagle, leopard, he realized that they're actually slightly different.
In the acoustic details of the calls, and it's something that is very difficult to hear when you really only see it in the spectrogram, which is kind of a visual representation of these calls.
This is on the computer?
Yeah.
But interestingly, once you've seen that, and once you know what to pay attention to, you go out into the forest and suddenly you do hear these differences, which you haven't heard before.
So you're saying when they hear a call, leopard coming, they go up the tree, but when they hear eagle coming, they run down the tree?
Exactly. Exactly.
So it's really kind of like a word. Like a word. Now, here's an interesting question. I mean, if a French couple were sitting next to me on the subway and they were saying, "Do you know where Sam was last night?" in French, if I don't speak French, I'm outside of that conversation. But a lot of people do speak French and they can listen to French people talking. The question's then raised, if you live in the forest and you speak chimp or you speak eagle or you speak snake, would you ever be able to overhear or learn something from a neighborly species? In other words, is there an equivalent of listening to the other person talking French in the wild?
Good question.
And that brings us back to Klaus.
Well, Klaus was wondering the same thing. So take those alarm calls, for instance. He wanted to know whether different species of monkeys could understand each other.
Right, so...
And luckily for Klaus, there's like at least 10 different primate species living inside that Thai forest.
So there's...
One, colobus monkeys.
Two, spot-nosed monkeys.
Three, chimpanzees. Four,
galagos.
Five,
colobines.
Six, putty-nosed monkeys.
Seven,
mangabey species.
Eight,
prosimians.
Nine,
Campbell's monkey.
And then the Dianas, 10.
Yeah, so it's a very, very rich primate fauna.
So Klaus's question was, could Diana monkeys understand the alarm calls of another one of these monkeys, the Campbell's monkey?
Oh, could they go across monkey lines, so to speak?
Exactly. So he used that same setup from before.
The speaker thing where he plays the sound into the trees?
Yeah, and he played the eagle and leopard alarm calls from the Campbell's monkeys to the Dianas to see if they'd react.
And what we found there, to our great surprise, was that the Diana monkeys...
They understand it.
Really?
Really?
Yep.
They take it very, very seriously and respond to it very strongly.
So a Diana monkey hearing a Campbell's eagle alarm call will respond as though there were an eagle and will respond to the leopard alarm call as though there were a leopard, and vice versa.
And it doesn't stop there.
Klaus started playing the monkey calls to birds.
Such as hornbills.
Yellow-casked hornbills.
It turns out that...
They understand it.
The birds?
Yeah, these hornbills...
Are capable of discriminating these different monkey alarm calls.
Wow.
So it's a pretty substantial web species basically eavesdropping on each other's calls in these forests.
But Klaus himself, he was still on the outside of it all.
It is that general sense of... perhaps not really belonging there. But then...
He told me about this one day.
I was working in the forest.
He had gone out for the day, and he had gone out alone.
And was very far away from camp.
And it was in the late afternoon, and he realized that he should probably be heading back to camp.
Because I still had to walk for, something like 15, 20 kilometers to back to camp.
And he was walking past a kind of valley.
And then I heard on the other side of the valley... a monkey group giving leopard alarm calls, which doesn't happen that often.
It was the first time that he wasn't actively listening, but he heard these monkeys make this call and recognized it.
It was absolutely striking.
And he was actually quite excited by this.
Because I was suddenly able to understand what the monkeys trying to say, so to speak.
Those monkeys had picked up a leopard.
Right beneath that sound, there the leopard would be.
Right. But, you know, those monkeys were way across the valley.
So I didn't really think that much and walked on, perhaps, you know, half a mile further down the road.
And the next group of Diana monkeys still across the valley,
start giving leopard alarm calls as well.
And he kind of took notice of that. And then it happened a third time, a few minutes later.
What became clear to me very rapidly is that a leopard was
tracking him.
Oh. Of course, I couldn't see it because it was, you know, dense forest, but I assumed that the leopard saw me. And of course, that, you know, is just one of these moments where you're, you know, you're totally alone, far, far away from camp.
What does he do?
He kept walking. It happened. A fourth group called leopard. Fifth group called leopard. And then the group stopped calling.
The only thing I could think of is to pick up, you know, a large branch.
I shouldn't laugh. That's just terrifying.
Klaus, would that stick have done anything for you?
I doubt I really would have been able to do very much with a stick.
But as he's standing there, stick in hand, he realizes he's just entered the forest. He's become
the 11th primate.
The 11th primate.
Because there are those 10 other species of primate, and now?
Me. Suddenly, I shifted from being the objective observer to being, you know, sort of part of that whole crowd in there. Even though, you know, we're separated by 20, 30 millions of years of evolutionary history, you know, these humble creatures, you know, were able to teach me something about, you know, what was going on in the forest. And, I mean, of course, it wasn't intentional. They weren't trying to inform me or anything like that. But it was a very emotional experience.
So what happened? I mean, obviously, he didn't get eaten. What happened?
Well, he made it back to camp, and he's not sure what happened to the leopard. The leopard must have slinked off into the forest. In the end, it became
just another story to tell each other over beers in the evening, I suppose.
Yeah.
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 Thanks for that story to Ari Daniel Shapiro, our correspondent.
And also thanks to Klaus Zuberbühler and Khan Slabachkov. I'm Jad Abumrad.
I'm Robert Krulwich.
And we'll be right back.